got a lot of information that we obtained from those first two wells and from the seismic data, and we're still in the process of evaluating it.
An update from the company that announced big plans for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline 2 years ago. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 15th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Cold Bay residents get a front row seat to the volcano shower.
As it got darker, you could really see it shooting up and out, and then you could see the lava flow going down the side of the mountain.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at the AlaskaNanookCommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
A few years ago, executives from startup oil company Great Bear Petroleum told Alaska legislators that they'd drill some 200 North Slope wells per year for 15 years. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the company is reviewing its first two well samples and seismic data and doesn't know whether it'll drill any more this year.
The company caught many by surprise when it snatched up 500,000 acres in a 2010 lease sale. But 2 years after executives told lawmakers the company could pump a million barrels into taps a day, it isn't even close to serious production. Former Alaska Revenue Commissioner Patrick Galvin is now deputy general counsel at the company. He says Great Bear is analyzing geological data from wells drilled last year.
We've got a lot of information that we obtained from those first two wells and from the seismic data, and we're still in the process of evaluating it.
That's taking place in the San Francisco Bay Area. Galvin would not say how many wells he hopes the company will frack or whether initial projections were too high.
We've got a lot of acreage and a lot of determinations to be made with regard to what a full field development would look like.
Great Bear plans on cracking the source rock on the North Slope with a mix of chemicals to release oil. About a quarter of the wells in the state have been hydraulically fractured. Unlike the Marcellus Shale in the eastern U.S., these wells would primarily harvest oil, not gas. And unlike the Lower 48, some environmental groups are welcoming the possibilities. The water table near the proposed well sites is filled with brackish water, so it could not be used for human consumption. Lois Epstein is an engineer and works with the Wilderness Society. She says the conservation community could get behind this proposal, in part because the operations will be on state land, land she says is less sensitive than federally protected acres. And as an Alaskan, it's good to see more oil in the pipeline.
It could be a good thing for the state of Alaska to increase flow through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline by tapping into some resources that are near the existing infrastructure.
The company's two existing wells are near the Dalton Highway.
They've chosen it for more than just the geology. They've also chosen it because it's got some closeology, close to existing infrastructure.
That's Kathy Forster, the chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. She says in the past, companies have started near existing gravel roads and infrastructure, then moved further away as production scaled up.
You know, unless you're going to find another Prudhoe Bay, you can't afford to build all of your own infrastructure. You need to rely on what's already in place.
The company has not applied for any permits beyond the ones it has for six well sites along the Dalton Highway. Forster says she remains optimistic the project will still pan out, even though the state is considering new regulations on fracking. A public comment period on proposed rule changes, like requiring producers to disclose fluids online, just ended.
We're not proposing anything out of line with other states that are doing hydraulic fracturing of shales.
Great Bear's Pat Galvin says he's also optimistic about the prospects, but the project appears to be taking longer than expected. The company's founder, Ed Duncan, told legislators 2 years ago he could be pumping oil into taps by last summer. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Pavlov Volcano put on a light show for residents of several communities on the Alaska Peninsula last night. As KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, activity at the volcano has increased and it's spewing ash up to 20,000 feet.
Colm Bay resident Molly Watson was watching Pavlov for signs of activity from her kitchen window most of Tuesday night.
And I'd kind of given up on it, thinking, we're not going to see anything else, just smoke. As soon as I mentally thought that, and I was actually writing that to a friend I was emailing, as sure enough, I saw the spark, and I was like, what is that?
Watson says at first it just looked like a faint glow on the side of the mountain, but that it got clearer over time.
As it got darker, you could really see it, you know, shooting up and out, and then you could see the lava flow going down the side of the mountain.
Pavlov was also shooting up ash clouds, some of them rising up to 20,000 feet. Alaska Volcano Observatory scientist in charge, John Power.
Most of the plumes that we've been seeing are more in the 15,000-foot range and seem to be falling out of the atmosphere quite quickly. So far there hasn't been any widespread ash fall from this, and it certainly has not gotten up high enough to affect international air travel.
Nevertheless, an advisory has been issued for all flights in the area, and Power says the observatory will be monitoring for ash clouds reaching 30,000 feet or above. He adds that other agencies are keeping a close eye on air quality in local communities.
There is some concern for ash fallout, although in the 2007 eruption, it didn't pose much of a problem for those communities, and we'll be hopeful that is the case this time.
So long as it is, Cold Bay and Sandpoint residents can rest easy and continue to enjoy the light show. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
The recent detection of two cases of rabies in wolves trapped south of the Brooks Range has prompted concern about whether the deadly disease has reemerged in the interior. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, many pet owners in Fairbanks are getting their animals vaccinated as a precaution.
Charles Scott was one of a steady stream of locals who showed up on the first night of a rabies vaccination clinic being put on by the Fairbanks North Star Borough this week at the animal shelter.
Just in case they come in contact with something, even though I let them out in my yard, I want to protect them.
Scott had his hands full wrestling two 150-pound puppies across the parking lot.
They're brindles, they're Fila Mastiffs, and they're 8 months old. Sit.
Big girl and little girl.
Scott says he heard about this spring's cases of rabies in wolves near Chandelier Lake, and the borough's $5 vaccination clinic prompted him to get his dogs in for shots. That was the case for a number of dog and cat owners on hand for the first day of the six-day clinic. Shelter director Sandy Besser says the event is in response to the public.
We've gotten many calls from folks about the wolves, just generally concerned, and so we decided to offer a rabies clinic. Low cost, try and get folks in that don't have rabies or wouldn't normally because they felt there was no likelihood of the disease coming into the interior.
Besser stresses that rabies is not curable and having pets vaccinated for it is required by both state and borough law. She says she's never seen a case in Fairbanks.
I guess back in the 40s there were documented cases of it in the interior. But, you know, they're never really sure how much is out there just at low levels in the fox population and stuff. And so if your dogs are out running or your cats are running wild, you don't know what they come in contact in the way of either wildlife that's active or carcasses of decayed animals. So it's not here until it's here.
Besser says past borough rabies vaccine clinics have been once a year single day events, and this month's schedule of weekday evenings plus a Saturday should address the increased public demand. Borough contract veterinarian Tamara Rose is on hand to help administer shots.
I'm not panicked at all.
Dr. Rose says she's interested to see what additional testing by the state turns up about rabies in the interior, but the local scare among some pet owners is a good way to address any potential problem.
We had conversations with the state vet, Dr. Gerlach, and he just thought it would be a good idea, and Sandy Besser thought it would be a good idea if we just kind of use this opportunity to. We knew there'd be a lot of talk about rabies and people who kind of don't get the fire under their feet. Well, they'll get their fire under their feet with this. And I mean, I think it's still pretty safe, but rabies is a public health issue. So we're just using that to make sure that everybody gets vaccinated and to keep everybody from worrying so much.
Rose says the single rabies vaccine is pretty safe for animals. And although there can be reactions, more animal lives are saved by vaccines than are hurt by them. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Inupiaq rap artist who sings with a message for young people.
I remember what it was like to be that age, and it was really awkward and confusing and hard.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Master of Public Administration at the University of Alaska Southeast is building a network of public administrators across Alaska and the Yukon Territory. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. The Alaska Energy Authority encourages you to renovate right this spring. Alaskans spend up to 50% of their income on energy. For energy-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Say so long to summer drivers riding the ferry for free. Wave goodbye to the winter round-trip discount. And printed schedules, those too are on their way out. The changes are some of the ways the Alaska Marine Highway plans to address a $3.5 million spending cut mandated by the legislature. Ferry Business Enterprise Director Dick Leary announced the cuts at yesterday's Marine Transportation Advisory Board meeting. He said managers did not want to cut sailings where tickets had already been sold. That means no reductions to the summer schedule that runs through September.
We also feel very strongly that the winter schedule as it now exists is a bare-bottom service level. And so if possible, we don't want to cut any of the winter schedule. And that takes us from October 1st to April 30th. So, of course, you put one and two together, and you only got May and June left.
Managers also agreed that none of the system's 35 port communities should lose service for an extended amount of time. Officials say they will consider raising ticket prices and retiring ferries if further cuts come in future years. The remote village of Atka in the Western Aleutians is home to just 71 people, but that's about to change. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, the local processing plant wants to quadruple its workforce, and with that, the city of Atka is ramping up a campaign to replace its dilapidated clinic.
When patients step over the threshold into Atka's health clinic, they're taking a bit of a risk.
Because our floor is rotting right now, we had to put a board over it to keep it safe because it was so soft so that we didn't lose any patients or anybody coming in.
That's Millie Prokopyov. She's the village's wellness advocate and the clinic's only permanent employee. The 33-year-old building houses the clinic on the first floor and Atka's City Hall on the second floor.
And it's so old and the nails are starting, you know, to pull out themselves just from the wind, the building swaying back and forth.
In addition to the structural decay, Prokopyov says it's also becoming clear that the clinic isn't big enough to serve the community anymore.
We have no space. Like if we ever had an emergency of six or more, there would be no, it would be really hard because there's no rooms, no beddings, nothing.
Atka didn't used to have a reason to plan for an emergency like that, one that would send six people to the clinic in a single day. But it's not so far-fetched now. At a ceremony last week celebrating the completion of some big infrastructure projects in Atka, representatives from the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Community Development Association, or APICTA, gave more details on a plan to triple production capacity at their fish plant. Atka Pride Seafoods only employs about 15 processors now, but APICTA's chief operating officer, John Severe, told villagers that that's about to change.
Our plans over the next few years is to put a 65-person bunkhouse here, and that will probably be within the next year.
In one fell swoop, Atka's population will nearly double, from 71 villagers to about 140 residents and workers. That's added incentive to get a new medical facility built and fast. City Administrator Julie Dirk says now that the village has finished its 17-year-long project to build a hydroelectric power plant, she's zeroing in on the clinic. The Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association is getting involved, and they're lobbying Congress for funding on Atka's behalf. But with the federal budget being stretched so thin already, Dirk says she isn't holding her breath.
Not going to sit and wait for them to do it. I'll still be doing my bit.
Her bit is lobbying the state. Atka requested $500,000 in capital funding during this legislative session to finish off the design plans and lay the groundwork for even more fundraising. That request was denied, and Dirk says it wasn't the first time.
I put it in there here every year. It's our number one priority in this village here.
Dirk says the design is 95% complete, and it's pretty straightforward. It gives the clinic more space to examine patients, a dedicated morgue, and moves the city hall entrance away from the clinic's front door. The estimated price tag is more than $3 million and rising. That's more than ATCA's annual budget. And while Atkins are used to pursuing big, expensive projects over a long timeline, with the clinic floor about to give way, they may not be able to wait. Reporting in ATCA, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
State wildlife officials have closed a subsistence muskox hunt near Kotzebue because of evidence of wanton waste of the animals. Area biologists say five cow musk oxen from the Cape Thompson herd were killed sometime during January or February of this year. According to Jim Dow, a biologist with the state office in Kotzebue, wildlife officials were tipped off to the killings when two musk oxen bodies were spotted by census takers last month. On further investigation, state wildlife troopers found five more cow bodies that had apparently been shot and then left unsalvaged. Dow says the illegal harvests exceeded the harvest quota for the unit. The hunt was scheduled to open July 1st. The closure does not affect a similar muskox hunt on the Seward Peninsula. State officials are keeping an eye on anticipated flood conditions in the interior of the state, but in the Matanuska-Sioux Sitna borough, flooding has already started. Borough officials say the ground is saturated with rain from last fall's heavy storms, and that coupled with the lack of snow this winter is causing conditions that give melting ice runoff nowhere to go. Casey Cook is the Matsu borough's emergency manager.
We're not seeing any real high water on any of the rivers or the bigger creeks. But, yeah, just a lot of places that we haven't seen had flood issues before are now experiencing that localized flooding just because the water is finding new routes.
Cook says the ground has not yet thawed completely because the winter's light snowfall did not provide insulation, so the ground froze more deeply than normal, and much of last fall's flood water froze above ground, and that is adding to the problem.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma even when you're feeling your best to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
A Petersburg fisherman has recovered more than half of the hand-carved cedar paddles that were lost by the One People Canoe Society late last month. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
When Petersburg's Jeff Erickson heard a radio story about the lost canoe and cedar paddles, he thought he could help. Erickson's a longtime commercial fisherman and has beachcombed in Seymour Canal for 20 years, so he was sure he knew exactly where the paddles would wash up. He headed to Seymour just before the herring fishery there early this month.
We got up there in the middle of the night, anchored up, and I got up first thing in the morning, went to the beach, and there was a life jacket. And I knew that I was close, and I also knew since it was bright orange that nobody had been on the beaches yet. So I just a couple more steps, and lo and behold, there was a paddle all wrapped up in the seaweed. And I'm like, wow, it's a great day. And I went a little farther, found another paddle, and then another paddle. So I found four paddles at the first beach.
When Erickson returned to his boat, the rest of his crew wanted to help. He says they searched about 12 miles of beach over a three-day period and found a total of 24 paddles and about the same number of life jackets as well as some seat cushions. The crew of the state research vessel Medea agreed to take the paddles and gear back to members of the One People Canoe Society in Juneau. Erickson was happy with his crew for taking part in the search, and he calls the experience of finding the paddles spiritual.
And these are all hand-carved cedar paddles. It was really moving to be able to recover them and knowing they're going back to the right people that own them. So that's really awesome.
Making the individualized paddles was part of the experience for the canoers as well as those who helped sponsor their trip. Alicia Chilton is one of the organizers of the One People Canoe Society in Juneau.
It's absolutely amazing. I didn't realize it was one person that had found them, and I would love to meet Jeff in person. It's been absolutely fabulous, though, having some of our gear recovered, especially the paddles.
The Yakutat and Juno crew's paddles washed away when two of their canoes broke loose while under tow in rough weather near Seymour. Chilton thinks the group lost 42 paddles in all. They initially recovered both canoes, but one broke loose a second time and remained missing. Chilton says the group received word last week that a Petersburg hunting guide, Scott Newman, found that missing canoe in Gambier Bay off Admiralty and moved it to a more protected spot.
It is definitely repairable, and we've got a couple different fishing vessels that have offered to pick the canoe up onto their vessel and bring it all the way to Juneau for us. Or Scott has also offered to bring it into Petersburg, where we're working with Alaska Marine Lines to get the canoe ship back to Juneau.
One People Canoe Society crews from Juneau, Yakutat, Sitka, and Cake joined others from Prince of Wales and Wrangell for the rededication of the Sheikh's Tribal House in Wrangell early this month. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
There are not great numbers of female rappers out there, and Alaska Native female rappers probably number in the single digits, but one such artist is finding great success in the state and around the world as a woman with a passion for raising awareness of the struggles of Native people. APRN's Lori Townsend sat down with her recently.
Inupiaq performer Allison Warden almost seems to be two people. There is Allison, the calm, benevolent speaker and youth mentor.
I love the youth, and the youth love me. I remember what it was like to be that age, and it was really awkward and confusing and hard.
And then there is Aku Matu, the ferocious rapper who dominates the performance stage.
Everybody loves the Aku Matu. When she comes to town, she knows just what to do. Everybody loves the Aku Matu. She takes the mic like a one and a two. Everybody
the 40-year-old performer has been working in theater for half her life. Her mom was a minister, and she grew up in the church around choirs and a lot of music. She played guitar in high school, but one day,
I saw a rap artist come when I was about 23 or 24 to Juneau, and it was pretty amazing. It was a Native rap artist, and that experience inspired me to, maybe I could try to rap. Maybe, I wonder how you even go about that.
Over the past 6 years, she's clearly figured it out, and she's mastered her own style, blending her theater training with props like a polar bear head she created and wears on stage to help tell the stories of her people, the land, and the animals they depend on.
Hi, my name is Homer. I'm a polar bear. Don't worry, I'm not going to eat you guys, even though some of you look pretty tasty.
Visiting Kaktovik, you can see directly that the polar bears are impacted by, you know, just the melting that's happening and the climate, the shift in the climate.
There's just one thing I don't understand. Why is it taking me so long to reach land? Oh, where did all the ice go?
One of her songs is about her mom, who was born in Barrow and raised in Kaktovik. As a child, she was one of more than a dozen children sent to a hospital in Seattle with tuberculosis. She came back alone.
13 that left Kaktovik, only one came back clean. Only one came back alive. Only one survived. Only one came back alive. Only one survived. It was my mom. Can you imagine, see, what that would do to a village's psyche?
You know, my mom grew up in a house that didn't have all these internet and TV and cable, and, you know, she had to start the wood stove every morning, and now she's on Facebook. It's just amazing what that generation went through, because it was really not good, a lot of it, you know, and it's hard for us to face those things.
Facing the pain of the past and the concern for the future is a big theme in her songwriting, sometimes in an in-your-face way.
Fight, fight! Indigenous people, stand up for your rights! Indigenous people, stand up and you fight! Doesn't matter what race you are, if you're black or white, we can all stand together and we can all fight, fight! You think I'm just gonna get let go, just bend over and take it, cause I'm a passive Eskimo? No, I'm in you back! And like a polar bear, I'm making a comeback!
we still fighting for these things, you know? I mean, just for the right to be ourselves and live on our land the way that we are. I mean, just to be a human being on our own land and to eat what we eat from the land and live in our traditional ways. I mean, we've lived that way for over 10,000 years, you know, since time immemorial, and we're still fighting for the basic right just to be ourselves. It's ridiculous.
Warden also uses humor and her theater training to create characters that educate audiences around the world about a changing Arctic. At a performance in California, her auntie character tells the gathering not to hold Warden responsible for the sentiments of all Native people and helps the crowd relax and have fun.
It's so good to see you. Look, I'm doing yoga now. Even elders can do yoga. Coming up with my own yoga video. Blubber. Yoga. Okay.
A big passion for Allison Warden is working with young people in rural Alaska.
That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is hopefully to mobilize the youth to become more active, to help change these things that are still coming into our communities. That's the hope, you know, turn off the TV and the video games and start doing community organizing. So what I say to you young people.
I'm an ancestor and I say, everything's gonna be okay.
This year, she plans to take a break from touring to produce a rap CD featuring her unique style of activism. In Anchorage, I'm Lori Townsend.
You got to do the things in your heart that you know you're supposed to do.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyce and Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and Lori Townsend in Anchorage. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Start a second career. Earn a Master's of Arts in Teaching degree from the University of Alaska Southeast, from home or on campus. Registration information at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. As an active senior, your independence is important to you. One of the ways for you to maintain your independence is to reduce your risk of falling. A fall risk assessment can be part of your initial or annual Medicare exam. They'll ask about your vision and review your medications for possible problems. Learn ways to improve balance, strengthen muscles, and reduce hazards at home. Contact your Medicare provider for an appointment. This message in good health is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.